Welcome, welcome, guys, to another episode.
Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. We have our distinguished guest coming back for part two, Dr. Eric Mitchell. He's an MD, and we've just want to continue this fascinating conversation we're having with him and talking about the history of the plant and his involvement as an orthopedic doctor and surgeon, and what his plans and what he's doing moving forward. So, Dr. Mitchell, welcome back.
Hey, thank you very much for having me back, both of you. I'm glad to be back.
Yes, where we left off, I mean, it was in depth. I mean, there's things that we knew of, but then there was things that you added to that just like, just kind of opened our eyes.
Yeah, mind blowing.
Yes, definitely. So please continue. And in reference to the history we've touched on, but also what led you to, you know, getting into the field of studying cannabis and hemp.
Well, again, it was the opioid epidemic, and because I realized that Maine had a special, and that's where I live in Maine. Okay. And there's been an evolutionary process going on since 1995. And let me give special credits to Dr. Mitkaria. Dr. Mitkaria sacrificed an awful lot because he wanted to help a couple of guys that were his patients. One of them had AIDS, and the medication was making them nauseous. And you have to understand, the United States pharmaceutical companies had tried to reproduce the pharmacological component of 9-delta-tetrahydrocannabinoid or THC. And Dr. Mitkaria helped to get Proposition 215 passed in California in 1996. Now, he was put under a lot of stress, and they took his license. The medical community took his license because of what I told you earlier or told you in the previous show, that, you know, doctors did not want to mess with cannabis in any way because it jeopardized their DEA license. Okay? So Dr. Mitkaria put his on the line, and he got Proposition 215, which was an alternative medical program where people could get a certificate to use cannabis as an alternative medicine, as a compassionate alternative medicine. And in 1997, Oregon created an alternative medical program. In 1998, the state of Washington created this alternative medical program. In 1999, Maine and Alaska created this alternative medical program. And those were the first five. Now we have 36 states that have an alternative medical program. So this was very important and monumental, because it gave people a chance to understand that it was more than to get high. It was we still didn't have the ability to study it with any great degree, because even going before the Supreme Court, they said that we could not study it. So a lot of, and there was science going on now around it. I mean, from 1962, when Raphael Mashula,
yes,
an Israeli doctor, encapsulated CBD and THC, okay, it took him, he studied this for 30 years as it became the endocannabinoid system, and we had different scientists understanding that we made cannabinoids in our body. We made phytocannabinoids in our body. Two of them principally. One name is anandamide, and the other one known as 2-AG because it's too long to pronounce. While I was talking about the whole synergetic component of cannabis and TVL, there are many, many terpenes, there are many, many flavonoids, there are many things in it that we want to use to its fullest medical potential. And that takes research. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to send you an article, a 6-page article I just did, that kind of encapsulates the history, but tells you where we have to go. And we have a lot more research to do. because we have a lot of unknowns. And we have to get peer review,
yes,
golden standard research for physicians to be supposed to be put in medical school. When the Farm Bill of 2018 was passed, 87% of allopathic medical schools, MDs, like my school, the University of Pennsylvania, did not teach, did not have a department. So we have a lot of work to do. And we just opened up prison gates in two ways. Prison gates from the standpoint that a lot of people's, a lot of states now have come to the point where they are letting people out of prison and they're expunging their medical legal records because this is a plant that is now becoming much more legally directed. 15 states now have recreational programs. So how are you going to lock up somebody in that state when now they can go to a dispensary in Pache? So there's a lot of social justice that's wrapped in this plan as well.
Yes.
A lot, yes.
They got a lot of work to do with that and trying to fix it as well, because it seems that now they're trying to use the industry to pay for their misdeeds.
Well stated. it's a natural flip. Okay, there are two sides of the coin, and they flip the coin, and they're going to use whatever they can. It's still about dollars. In sense, what did I read tonight? That I see that one state that cannabis just outstripped the alcohol production. We know that in Colorado, that started their recreational program. That was in the first year they had superseded and knocked down the alcohol revenues by 25%.
Nice.
And studies that have shown that there's been no increase in automobile accidents
exactly
because of cannabis.
Yeah, and that's what a lot of people, you know, are nervous about, that it's going to be an increase. But the studies have shown that, doesn't. So let's talk about your take on cannabis use and kids, children. As you know about our son and you know, what we're using, it has been really a miracle for him. So I want to know your take on it.
My take is indicative of the article that just came out in the FirstTimeParentMagazine.com, where I've written an article with a dynamic young lady, Ms. Grimes, who is a cannabis nurse out of Maryland. And if you can suggest that your public goes to Amazon and gets ASA's medicine, ASA, ASA's medicine. And it's about a little boy that's like in the third, fourth grade that is going to a new school. And he's more concerned, of course, about what sneakers he has on, whether he's going to be accepted for the sneakers, or whether he's, you know, going to be okay with his backpack. He was worried about those things that society makes important, until he finds out that he asked the teacher to go see the nurse because he needs his cannabis. And when that word comes out, the kids think that he's a drug addict or that he's on drugs. And ACE's medicine is 39, 41 pages long, mostly illustration, but it talks about how fast we make rash decisions. And Raul is one of the ones that jumps him, and then the nurse comes in and explains, you know, that this is a botanical, that this is a plant medicine versus pharmaceutical medicine. And so the book is out. You can get it on Amazon, called ACE's Medicine, and I certainly encourage everyone to do that. You all have a very, very strong background. Then I wrote the article, Parents, Retrain Your Brain. Kids Need CBD Too. And that's out today in the Parent magazine, in the First Time Parent magazine. And we're really pleased because it is a non-cannabis publication that feels that it's important for people to know in the general public. Now, Ms. Grimes and I have just started, Nurse Grimes and Dr. Mitchell have just started the second book of the series. And it'll probably, not even sure what to call it yet, but it's probably going to be Charlotte's Day. And it's going to be Charlotte at, she's at a doctor's office, and when a little girl named Sage, S-A-G-E, comes in, she's 6 years old, she's Asian, she's a biracial kid, and she has the shakes at night. And she has a type of epilepsy that mostly affects at night, and she shakes, and she's on a cocktail of different pharmaceuticals, and her mother is searching desperately, like Charlotte's mother and father searched desperately for Dr. G, who is an Afro-American physician that is going to see Sage and start her on CBD and THC. Okay, and we're going to find a good way for her to take it, such that we don't have to put oil under her tongue, because as a 6 year older, that might be a nebulous concept, but if we push it in one of her drinks or something that she really enjoys, then it will be easy. So we are going to go through and constitute the book, the second book, that we're going to talk about kids and their interactions. And in reality, it's a celebration to a large extent, because it was Charlotte's Web, okay, that helped to de-demonize.
Yeah.
Okay, the whole, there was the Rick Simpson oil that helped to decriminalize and allow the FDA to give the very first group, the first patent to a synthetic CBD product known as Epidiolex, mm-hmm. which is $6,000 a month, which is terribly expensive.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay, so we can talk maybe at another time about the caregivers and what we had non-medical personnel, you know, learning about the plant. They were botanists, and they were, you know, people that had a vested interest in plant-based medicine. Now, I got my plant-based medicine 101, 202 and 303 when I was selected to go to China on an ambassadorial program to China in sports medicine. That was 1986. And it shook my world. It shook my Western medicine world to pieces. What I saw, what I witnessed firsthand, was the fact that what they were doing in China with weeds and bushes and sticks, which I considered at that time those elements, that we were doing with antibiotics and scalpels.
Wow.
Yes, it was all about, I came home, you know, with my medical degree between my legs because of what I had been exposed to for a month that we spent in China, going from Guangzhou to Hangzhou to Beijing, going all around. We were lecturing on sports medicine. I had worked with the cervical spine, and I published in a textbook, and I had my lecture to induce osteogenesis, and I had different things to talk about in the sports medicine arena, but it was bigger than that. I came home and understood that the botanical medicine was 3,000 years old, and my university, which I helped celebrate the 250th anniversary of the University of Pennsylvania, is one of the, if not the oldest medical school in the United States of America. So there was a big differential between 3,000 years and 250 years.
Yeah. Huge. Major. Major.
Yeah. So Nina, you asked, how did I get involved? I mean, that was another big, big stepping stone for me when I got home. Humbled pie was all over my face. And so I had to look and say, what are you doing? What are you doing to interdict with this narcotic, you know, rage, or with this pharmaceutical, you know, assault?
Now, in your experience, does genes, someone's DNA or gene makeup, have a difference in a sense of how they're being affected by the CBD or the THC?
I don't know whether it's truly gene basic, whether it's immunologically based. I'm not an immunologist. I think it's more related to the neurotransmitters. They have the neurotransmitters working at the optimal level. I want to leave one question here for us to take some solace with and to conjure in our minds. COVID-19 has unveiled a lot of deficits in healthcare delivery for us, especially in our black and brown neighborhoods. But I want you to think that the United States of America constitutes 4% of the world's population. And yet we have 25% of the cases in the world. Mm-hmm. Now India's catching up right now very quickly because they're in a free fall. But the other thing beyond that is 20%. We had early on a 20% death rate, 4% population with a 20% death rate. And I believe that what we did is we took out one of our natural components out of our farming ethos and made it and put a prohibition on it, stopped using it. The animals stopped eating it. We stopped getting it in our foods. We stopped using it. And I think that it's had bigger consequences because the whole point is that in 1999 at NIH, cannabis sativa L, cannabidiol, CBD, which is commonly called, was determined to be three things. Are you ready?
Ready.
It was written and patented to be an anti-inflammatory. It was written and patented to be neuroproliferative. And it was written and patented to be neuroprotective.
Yes.
Now, it took them from 1999 to 2003 to get a patent because it was oxymoronic. How can you say that a Schedule I drug has no clinical purpose and you give it three of the most major purposes that we can think of today? You know what diabetes is? Diabetes is a chronic low-grade inflammation. Do you know what dementia is? It's a chronic low-grade inflammation. You know what Alzheimer's is? It's a chronic low-grade inflammation. Do you know what IBS is? It's a low-grade chronic inflammation. I hope that you're getting the flavor.
Oh, yes.
Low-grade inflammation is a major component in all of our disease processes. And we need those anti-inflammatory components to get rid of the byproduct of the product.
Makes a lot of sense.
And I thought at one point that you couldn't patent the plant, but you can patent a component of the plant?
No, you can't patent the plant. You can't. I mean, come on. They call it weed. Why, man, they call it weed, man. How you going to patent weed?
Point taken.
Okay, good. No, you can't patent a plant. Only thing I could do was understand that the endocannabinoid system did not have a vitamin allocated to it. What is a vitamin? A vitamin is any substance that helps to perpetuate the efficacy and the efficiency of one of our biological systems. And when your mother made you eat your carrots because of vitamin A, she said they would make your eyes pretty, make your vision good. And she made you drink and eat all your food because of vitamin B complexes that were critically important in a number of different things. Vitamin C, if you didn't take it, you could get scurvy. That's what the sailors learned. Vitamin D, we know that we need that to get bone maintenance. Vitamin E, we know how important that is in scar formation and other factors. Vitamin K can't do without because we would not have a hematological system if we didn't have the regulatory components of vitamin K. Niacin, critically important. Folate has stopped, the disruption of the neural tube when a doctor finds that a woman's pregnant from his obstetrician gynecology standpoint, he immediately puts them on folate because folate has eliminated the neural tube defects that has happened when you don't have enough. And something as simple as taking folate through your pregnancy, you're eliminating a disease process. Well, how about cannabis? Should cannabis be part of our normal process? Well, I believe vitamin CBD should be. And so I named it on the first day that it became legal. I named it as the very first vitamin of the endocannabinoid system.
Please tell us about that. I was going to ask, but since you brought it up, please share.
Well, I put forth to the United States Trade Office that I wanted to be our product to be called vitamin CBD. Everybody knows, and we want you to daily. And our credo is if you had your daily vitamin CBD today,
yes,
to help to support your mental clarity and your bone health.
So it's basically for your health and wellness.
Yeah, wellness, yeah.
Your mental health, and bone health. I mean, those are the two health, things that I've you know, kind of put my claws around. Mm. But there are many other elements. There are many other elements. We know that that CBD can affect the Q receptors in the brain that can help reduce addiction behavior.
Mm.
Study done on the Mount Sinai in 2018. We know many other things that cannabis does in the neurotransmitting component. And now my point has been formulating different combinations to take advantage of different cannabinoids. There are now over 100 different cannabinoids, but the number one cannabinoid that we talk about is THC. The number two cannabinoid we talk about is CBD. And the number three cannabinoid, which is the three most frequent, is CBC. All of them come from something called CBGA. Now, I don't want to get people confused tonight. I've given a lot of letters out there.
Yeah.
But maybe there's another time that you have me back, mm-hmm, and we can just talk about the formulations of different cannabinoids and what they do. And there's something right now called Delta 8.
Yes, I've been hearing about it.
I've been hearing and reading about Delta 8.
And it's a loophole drug. When I say it's a loophole drug, the Farm Act, the Farm Bill of 2018 says that you cannot have Delta 9. Mm. So what people have done is find to how to move that Delta, that OH group from the ninth position to the eighth position.
And yeah, so when people are saying it's like the legality on that is kind of gray.
Oh, great. It's non-existent because there's nothing in the Farm Bill says that Delta 8 is to be classified, you know, or categorized as illegal.
So, yes, I know a woman who I've met, and she's using it for her son, and she said it's been amazing for his sleep. Amazing for his sleep.
Well, I have a product that I created called Two-Pass. Two-Pass is the simplest name I could give it because it uses two different pathological mechanisms. And the one that we've been talking about mostly tonight is called the endocannabinoid system, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we've been talking about is all the effects that cannabis has on the endocannabinoid system. But there's another precursor that operates through another system that can be synergistic with the endocannabinoid system. Same mission, different route. And that's called the cyclooxygenase pathway, and that's driven by something called CBDA.
Yes, we've heard about that.
Yes,
and A is just the acid form or the OH group. So that moving that OH group around has been a big thing, and moving that OH group, which is the acid component, which makes it an acid. Okay, is the precursor. CBDA is the precursor to CBD.
CBD.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes, we found that out.
Right. Now, we had a big propensity that we wanted to get CBD. We didn't know or appreciate or respect or care about CBDA. The CBDA has 1,000 times more serotonin receptors that can help that sleep and that and the calming component that it has.
Yes, because we have we know
personally
from personally of a friend of ours now that he uses the CBD only for his son with autism.
Okay, well, I've had a lot of success. You know, my people was CBDA. So that my two path has one half CBDA and one half CBD. Mm-hmm. Now we can get to another point in time of how I do it, because if you use certain distillation processes, you're gonna eliminate all your CBDA.
Yes, yes,
that's true.
If you use heat, then you destroy it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, we're definitely gonna have to have you on. Like, I can.
Yeah,
we're both kind of geeks about this, and we want to learn more.
Yeah,
and this is what the podcast is for, and we can have an isolated talk just about CBDA and
our journey.
Yeah, and our journey. So definitely, thank you so much.
Yes, Dr. Mitchell, hey, it's been mind blowing.
Thank you.
It's been amazing, and just to hear the stories and just the books that you're involved in this. We can relate to that because of our son. He's 8. We've been in this path for 6 years. Family members in the beginning were like, so you're going to give this to your kid? He's going to get high? And, you know, all the questions. And it's like, my God.
Bad parent.
Yeah, exactly. And then years later, come to us, hey, did you know that CB? It's like, we've been doing this for years. What do you think, what this was all about? So, I mean, hearing the things you were sharing with it brought back a lot of memories, you know, of our journey. And to this point, and then to hear the things that you're involved in and what you're doing, it's like, oh my God, finally, someone we could just connect with. Because, I mean, there are some great people in this industry, I have to say. And they've been very helpful. But to find someone like yourself who is really in deep in what you're doing, it's like, okay, we're going to stay in touch.
Yeah, and for me, it's like not that many doctors with your credentials are really speaking out about CBD. And we have a lot of people who are very hesitant. Even if their child has a neurological issue, they still are very, very hesitant to try. And I think they're waiting for more MDs to come out.
Yeah, yeah.
No doubt. And we're waiting for more research.
Yeah.
See, 5 million children in the United States, and there's 58 million children in the United States, which means that 2.9, almost 3 million children in the United States are going to be exposed to seizures at some time in their early life.
Yeah, like our son. Yes.
So how can we help those 3 million kids, including Aiden and Sage and Charlotte and Asa? Okay, now I've just added your son to some fictitious characters, but those characters tell the story.
Yeah, he's a walking miracle in our story. But Dr. Mitchell, if people wanted to get in touch with you, how would they do that?
Oh, go to dailyvitamincbd.com.
Yes.
And that's the website, and we can be contacted through our website. That's the best way. And place your order, and we'll get it out in the mail tomorrow, okay? And have you had your daily vitamin CBD today to help with your mental clarity, support your mental clarity and your bone health?
Appreciate it. Thank you very much, Dr. Mitchell. And we will be in touch, and we will definitely look forward to having you back on, because I think there's more. You know, there's always more. All right?
Fantastic. Please and thank you.
No, thank you very much for your help and your time.
All right. God bless. Take care.
God bless you. Good night.
I'm Josh Kincaid, capital markets analyst and host of your cannabis business podcast, The Talking Hedge, and newest member on PodCon X. So come on over and check out The Talking Hedge. We talk about business news, interviews, investments, events, all that stuff. So come nerd out with me over at The Talking Hedge. You can find me at thetalkinghedgepodcast.com or on all your favorite podcast platforms. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe, or don't, and I'm out.